Welcome to the Agents of Innovation podcast, where we feature conversations with entrepreneurs, philanthropists, and artists. Well, welcome back to the Agents of Innovation podcast. I am your host, Francisco Gonzalez, and I'm down here in Buenos Aires, Argentina, with the Jers Way, as he's known on Twitter. Jers, welcome to the Agents of Innovation podcast.
Glad to be here. We've been talking about this for a while, so I'm excited for this.
We have. And, you know, I have to do a little plug here to remind people, if this is your first time listening to the Agents of Innovation podcast, make sure you subscribe to us. We're on all the channels, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts. And also, during or after this interview, please, you know, like and comment. We'd like to hear what you had to say. And if you can, wherever you listen to this, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or YouTube, you know, write a little review for us and let us know what you think about the podcast. 5 stars, right? But for sure, let us know. Those reviews certainly help take this podcast even higher, and so that more people could hear Jers's story right here as well. So we first connected on Twitter, now known as X, and Jers and his girlfriend, Gabby, they were able to meet up with us on the Fearless Journeys group trip in Medellin, Colombia, where they primarily live. But it just so happens they're in Buenos Aires, Argentina right now. We're going to get to that story, Jers. But
absolutely.
But I know you're part of your story where I want to go back to. You are originally from the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and then maybe kind of bring the story to when you left the United States?
Absolutely. So I like to call myself a recovering American. It's been about 15 years now, 15, 16 years since I left the U.S. I'm originally from California, grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and very traditional, grew up as a suburb of San Francisco, just your stereotypical American childhood. Went to college in Arizona, and at a certain point I just sort of realized that this traditional American dream, American lifestyle wasn't for me. When I started out, I've always been very entrepreneurial, and I started a few businesses and eventually sort of got into real estate development in South Florida. Did that in my late 20s, early 30s. And this is pre-2008, so the market was absolutely booming. Had some success with that and just realized that I wasn't happy. That sort of just work, the American way wasn't for me. And I made the decision that when that market sort of started to head south, I was going to take some time off. The original idea was maybe 6 months, year traveling around Latin America. And here I am 15, 16 years later, really never slowed down.
Yeah. So, okay. Interesting. A few things I got to talk to you about there. You grew up in California. You also worked in real estate in the booming South Florida market in the early to mid 2000s, that period.
And actually before, so this would, you know, you're right, mid 2000s.
Yeah. By the way, if you think it was booming then, you should see it now. Yeah,
absolutely. I was there a few weeks back, and it's crazy, all the development.
But Jers, one of the things you just said here, you were talking about how you grew up very entrepreneurial, which to me implies work ethic, amongst many other things. But then you said the American dream, work, wasn't for you. So can you explain the difference here between those two concepts?
Yeah, it's interesting because I always just thought that that's how you did it. That was sort of the environment I grew up in, the work ethic that was instilled in me by my parents and sort of the community, my friends. It was all about, you know, you study hard, you get good grades, you go to a good college, you get a job. So that first step I never really jumped into. I never wanted to do like a corporate job or something like that. I always had this sort of entrepreneurial drive, and experimented with a few different businesses. And I enjoyed it. I mean, I thrive off of work and I like work, but I knew there was more. And so that's sort of that dichotomy between, you know, the work, go, but also knowing that, hey, maybe there are different ways out there. Maybe there are different ways to do it. I had always been like an avid traveler. I started when I was in the university, so 18, 19 years old. In the summers, I started going to Europe. And it was just so different, the way of life, everybody spending their afternoons at restaurants, just enjoying life. That always spoke to me. I knew there had to be a different way. And so after sort of testing the waters, doing some businesses, I said, hey, I'm going to take some time and really explore. And that's sort of how I came to Latin America.
So it was about 2008, and that's sort of around the same time the real estate bubble was bursting too, right, in 2008. Where did you first go in Latin America, and what was your thinking in terms of how long you might be there?
So the first stop was Panama, as it is for a lot of people, mostly because my research, and you got to keep in mind, research was a lot more difficult back then. You didn't have the wealth of information. The internet was still newish, there certainly was not the information that you have today. And the limited information I could find said, Panama is a great place to start. There's a thriving expat community. It's great for business, for banking. Because I always knew I wanted to set something up in Latin America, but I didn't know what it would end up being. And so I started in Panama, and turned out I didn't like it. The original idea was going to spend 6 months-ish in Panama. I made it almost that. I think I was there 4 or 5 months, and Panama just really did not speak to me.
And this was the Panama of 2008, too,
this was
right?
The Panama of 2008.
And I don't know how it was in 2008. I visited for just 4 or 5 days in 2021. Enjoyed my time, but the one thing is when I landed and we drove around, I said, this kind of looks like Miami. I mean, the skyline, I don't know what it was like then, but...
Exactly. They were really building up that skyline. It's definitely improved since then. But it's sort of... It's going to sound sort of harsh, but it's like a second-rate Miami. It's all there, but it's very rough around the edges, almost like post-apocalyptic. You have all these high-rises, but if you look too closely, they're not put together so perfectly. And you have all these high-rises, and they're vacant. There's nobody living in them, which is one of the interesting things.
Yeah, so from Panama, where did you go next?
So from Panama, I went to Argentina.
Oh, where we're at right now.
Where we're at right now. I've almost come full circle, so to speak. Ended up spending a couple of years in Argentina. I loved Argentina. I found the city very European. As I mentioned, I really started all this traveling, taking these summer trips to Europe, and I found it very similar. You know, they say the Paris of Latin America, and that's really not that far off. I like the ambiance. I liked that you could walk everywhere. I liked all the little corner stores where you could buy your cheeses and your pastas. I really enjoyed the Argentinian people. I found them much warmer than the Panamanians. I came to Argentina next and really liked it. Probably would have stayed if it had not been for a bad relationship I was in at the time. So from Argentina, ended up doing sort of a 180 and went to rural Costa Rica.
Wow.
Which couldn't have been more different, living in the jungle, monkeys coming on the porch every day. So I did that for maybe 6 months. And then ended up in Medellin, sort of by chance, and really fell in love with Medellin back then. This was still very early. I think there were, you know, half a dozen of us expats back then.
What year about was this when you first got to Medellin?
So this was probably the first time I went was maybe 2011-ish.
Wow, yeah.
2012 in there.
Because you weren't really seeing a lot of expats there for probably, what, 6-7 years later,
yeah,
at least?
Exactly.
And I know the COVID 2020 period was like a tipping point where you got a lot more co-working spaces and things like that.
Exactly. I mean, when I first started in Medellin, walking around even what are now the touristy areas, Poblado, Parque Jerez, literally you would not hear English.
Comuna 13?
Yeah.
Was that even...
It was right at the point that they were sort of trying to open that up to be a tourist attraction, but it was not.
Well, we visited there and had a really interesting inside tour there. Met a local entrepreneur, my friend Carlos, who I met on my first visit to Medellin, as our local tour guide there when we did it, and it was a great experience. But I've read about it and read a whole book about that area, but it's just crazy how 20 years ago was like the most dangerous area maybe in the world, and yet it's just had this amazing turnaround, and it's so full of life now, and it's hard to even imagine it being a dangerous place. But it would have been interesting, right, to see that turn.
It was really interesting to see the change in all of Medellin, because it had, I'll give you an example. So originally my idea was to go to Cartagena, which was at that time a more popular, more touristed place. And the reason I changed it the last minute, I was in Costa Rica and the jungle and the humidity was killing me.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I still want to go to Colombia, hear great things about Colombia. And I Googled good weather, Colombia. And of course, the city of eternal spring, Medellin, came up. And I knew nothing about Medellin. I honestly hadn't even heard of the city, really. It had the reputation, so Pablo Escobar, I knew that, but I knew nothing about the city. And I remember I put it in Google, Medellin, and this is probably 2010. The first article that pops up is a Time magazine article from 1988.
Oh, wow.
And the title of the article was something to the effect, Medellin, the most dangerous city in the most dangerous country in the world. And so my sort of adventurous side said, okay, I want to check this place out.
Well, that's pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, look, I've been there twice, and they were both last year in 2023. So I can't imagine it, but it's a beautiful place. And like you said, the eternal spring. So I've only been in Bogota and Medellin in Colombia, but our mutual friend Ben Newman, who mm-hmm. you met on the Fearless Journeys trip to Medellin, he and his wife Christina, and you met Christina mm-hmm. too, they went to Cartagena just a couple weeks ago, and I saw one of Ben's posts, and he said, it's hot, I'm sweating, it's like Florida, right? And that's what Panama's like too, it's so hot and humid, and it's, you know, it's March right now. That I think
exactly.
They were at the beginning of March. So, but Colombia, like a place like I'm familiar with, Guatemala, the eternal spring. And so it's just amazing to get that cool temperature year round and just very pleasant. It's hard to beat. So, Jers, so you left your job in real estate in 2008. And you've been floating around mostly Latin America. I think you've spent some time in Spain too. But I also want to hear, how are you sustaining yourself? What do you do for work? Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
So I've had different businesses along the way. What I've been doing the last number of years, early on in my journey when I started, sort of I'm going to go back a little bit. It came to my attention that if you're going to be living outside of the United States, it might be a good idea to get another passport. And so I began...
And for those listening, you don't mean another U.S. passport. You
exactly.
mean another country's
another
passport.
Another citizenship.
Yeah.
And so I sort of went down that rabbit hole mostly for myself. I said, okay, how am I going to be able to get another citizenship? And I did a bunch of family research, and it turned out through some sort of backdoor loophole, I was able to get Austrian citizenship. And because I had no idea what I was doing, the process took years.
Hmm.
And in doing it, though, I made a bunch of connections, and I enjoyed researching. I enjoyed sort of putting that those connections together and seeing it come to fruition. So after I was successful, some friends, acquaintances started coming to me, hey, you got another passport. That's pretty cool. Can you help me? So I started helping a few people with citizenship by descent. And over the years, it just sort of grew into a pretty big business. And so mostly what I do at this point, I work with citizenships. We've added residency, business formations, tax optimization, really strategies for the person who has either already left their country or the person who is sort of in their country. They're not liking the direction of their world, but they have no idea where to begin. I really have developed strategies to help people do what I did and start their journey to become a world citizen, so to speak.
Yeah, and by the way, if you're not following Jers on Twitter, he has a great Twitter account at the Jers Way, right? J-E-R-Z Way.
Yeah.
And I'll put that here in the show notes and everything so that you can find it easily. But he gives daily lots of amazing advice. And if you want to dive further, you can connect and work with him. But, you know, right now, there's a lot of people anxious about a lot of things going on, whether it be in the United States or even in other countries. And they're looking maybe for a plan B, right? Or maybe a second residency somewhere else. So there's many reasons people want to do this. Maybe it's political reasons. Maybe they're frustrated with what's going on politically in their own country. And for some people, you know, it's not just, you know, I'm going to pay more taxes or whatever, but it might be a freedom issue in some countries, right? Like my dad's from Cuba. I know we have plenty of people we know from Venezuela and other places. So they're also looking for other ways to go. But there's also investment strategies, right? In ways that you want to maybe help your dollar or your peso go further. And so tell us a little bit about maybe some of the reasons why people might want to either get a second citizenship, a residency, maybe bank in a different country. Why would they want to do this? And what are some of the like general advice you might give?
So there are different types of people I work with. The first type are the younger individuals who are starting out, a lot of people in their 20s who sort of look at the world and look at the world of their parents, where they were able to buy a house and sort of live that in the U.S., the American dream, but in other countries, a similar thing. Many of the people we work with are not from the United States. They're from Europe. They're from Canada. And it's sort of a similar thing. The world has become more difficult. So somebody who's just starting out, it's much more challenging to achieve the same level of success that their parents have. So they look to go to other countries where they have opportunities, both as far as dating, as far as letting their dollar or euro go further. Then the second type of person we deal with are retirees, people, again, usually looking to stretch their money from back home, move to Latin America, take advantage of sort of this geo-arbitrage where things are cheaper. Argentina was a great place, now lesser. It's gotten more expensive in the last few months, but there's still a lot of great opportunities in Latin America. And then the third type, which is probably the majority of our clients, they're people, say, between 30 and 60. So they're in the peak of their career, and they have realized they can either work remotely, or they're a business owner, or they're looking to start a business. And the thought process is, hey, I can go to another country, I can have more freedoms, but I can also sort of use tax strategies so that my money stays with me. And especially like clients from Canada, the UK, EU countries who move to Latin America, in many cases, they can go from paying 50% taxes to literally paying no tax.
Yeah, and I heard that there's a lot of Russians down here right now in Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that's a symptom of what's going on, obviously, in their own country with the war with Ukraine. And maybe, you know, they just don't want to have a part of it, or they want to get out for whatever reason. But that's an example of, you don't know what's going to happen in your own country. And it'd be good to be prepared. I mean, Russia has a seat. They're not like Iran or some crazy country, right? I mean, they have a seat on the UN Security Council's like inner circle, right? So whatever you call that five member country and circle of countries there. But the so Russia, and it's a huge country. So I mean, maybe, you know, Russians some years ago might have had a little more ability to do this, and now maybe people are scrambling. And the reason I say this is I was just in Miami, and I was listening to a presentation of people trying to help people acquire other citizenships. And they said there's this country, it was a country in Latin America, and I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head, but they're one of the very few countries in the world that are still accepting Russians to become citizens.
It's probably Argentina.
It wasn't Argentina. It was a very small country on the north side of South America. But anyway... but maybe it's Argentina too. But but what I'm saying is, for Russians as an example, the world got really small very fast for the number of countries that would allow them to claim residency and start the citizenship process because of what's going on in their country, and they don't have any control, you know, what's going on with their government leaders. So that's just a kind of an example of maybe a plan B is a good idea.
Exactly. It's there are just so many changes, and I think the last 5-6 years has shown us how quickly the world can change. And whether it's restrictions, limiting freedom of movement, difficulty to move money between banks. I work with a lot of people who are in Bitcoin or in crypto, and more they're finding, living in the United States, living in Europe, they are unable to sort of move their money back and forth between crypto and fiat currency. Well, if they get new citizenship, if they get new residencies, they start banking in Latin America, it becomes possible. And there are myriads of reasons why people do this, but a lot of it does have to do with a plan B and just the optionality, having a choice. And the best time to give yourself more choices is before your choice is actually limited.
Yeah. So what's interesting to me about your story as well is you are now, your business is to help other people acquire these citizenships, residencies, advise them financially, where to bank, you know, what's the best kind of thing. And what's interesting to me about that is, you know, when you left the U.S. in 2008, on your Latin American adventure, which you may not have known it was going to be this long, but you came across these problems yourself, right? You mentioned how long it took to get the Austrian citizenship, and maybe it was more expensive too, and you may have found a better path had you known. And so somebody could be sitting here right now listening or watching this and thinking, hey, yeah, I've always thought about doing that. And maybe they could spend all the time in the world in their own life trying to figure it out and go on all the websites and do all the research. But you're like, I'm going to help you because I know all the information. This is my business. And I think that's interesting. It was a problem for you, and you turned it into a solution, not just for yourself, but for other people.
Exactly. And so much of it, I'll give another example. So when I first moved to Colombia and I decided I want to stay there, I need a visa, because if you want to stay more than 180 days in the country, you need a visa. And I was sort of a combination of being cheap and stubborn. I said, I can do this myself. And so, you know, I did the research, I talked to people, and, you know, I thought I had this perfect plan to get the visa. And I put together all the papers, and I basically went into you had to do it at the consulate back then. I went into the consulate, and they basically laughed at me. And what I thought was easy turned out not to be. And I paid to take a trip, and it ended up costing me 2-3 times what it would have cost me if I had just followed somebody's instructions who actually knew what they were doing. And now to this day, every time I renew my Colombian visa, when the system pulls up my record, it shows my visa that I was denied for all those years ago.
Oh, wow. So so you've now been in Medellin primarily, but I think you also go to Spain a lot. Is that right?
Yeah, so I was primarily in Medellin from when I got there till about 2016, 2017. And at around that time, I'd done a couple businesses in Colombia, and I was just sort of tired. I needed some change. And I decided to go back to school and get an MBA. And I did it in Spain.
Oh, wow. So where, like at a university in Spain?
IE, which is one of the better business schools in Europe.
That's fantastic.
And I did it as a cool program that totally fit my lifestyle, where it was partly in Madrid, partly in Los Angeles, partly in Singapore, Sao Paulo.
Wow.
So I got to do all this traveling around the world. I got an MBA. And then after I finished that, I stayed somewhat in Spain. Always careful never to spend more than 6 months there, because I didn't want to become a tax resident. But yeah, I spent a lot of time in Spain, still going back some to Medellin. And then sort of towards the end of last year, we came down to Argentina, and I hadn't been down here in years, and just fell in love with the place again. So we made the decision that for the next couple of years, we're going to be spending a lot of time down
here. So you
here.
Say we, I think you're referencing your girlfriend, Gabby, who's originally from Venezuela.
Yes.
And we're going to have her on the next episode here. And so we'll talk to her a little bit more about what she's doing. But I want to ask you, you said you've been down here now. And I remember we saw you in Medellin in October. We had dinner and you said, oh, in a few weeks or so, we're going to go down. I think you were going to Brazil and Argentina. Did you go to Brazil?
We went to Brazil.
Brazil first, then you went to Argentina.
Yep.
And then you never it seemed that you went to you tell me you've been in this region. You've been in Paraguay. You've been in Argentina. Maybe you skipped over to Uruguay. I don't know. Brazil. So it's now March, Jers, and I'm on my next group trip for Fearless Journeys, and we must be following you now. And so we'll have to see where you end up next. But why have you spent so much time down in this region?
I really think, again, back to sort of everything that's going on in the world, I think this region is one of the best to sort
when
of,
you say this region, Latin America, this, or this
no,
part of South
this
America?
This part of South America. I call it the Southern Cone. So it's basically Argentina, Southern Brazil, Uruguay, Chile, and Paraguay. I think this region really separates itself in a lot of ways from the rest of the world.
Hmm.
So if some sort of calamity were to happen, I really feel strongly that this would be the best region.
It's funny because my previous podcast here was with my friend Alejandro Storni, and he's from Buenos Aires here, and he's really helped advise us on our group trips here. And it's great. I'll have to connect you guys. You haven't met yet, and he's out of town until our trip starts in a week or so. But the very first time I was in Buenos Aires last year, and he was driving me around, and something just popped into my head, and I just thought, I wonder if there's earthquakes here. And I asked Ale, and he goes, no, not in Buenos Aires, and really not in Argentina, maybe kind of near the Chilean side, maybe they feel some. And I did learn later that Mendoza in the past has had some earthquakes. But he said, no, not in Buenos Aires, no earthquakes. And I said, and you're too far south, you wouldn't get a hurricane, right? Although sometime last fall, they got some kind of weird storm here, right? I don't know if it was quite a hurricane, but it was something weird that... But anyway, he was basically like, yeah, we pretty much don't have any natural disasters. And, you know, if the war breaks out into some kind of nuclear war, we're probably the last place that's going to get hit by any kind of radiation. I mean, we're just so far from where everybody else is. And I said, it seems like a nice place to go. I should also mention that we went to dinner later that night with another mutual friend of ours. And I repeated this and said, Ale said there's no natural disasters here and, you know, the nuclear war thing. And my friend who was at the table there says, oh, yeah, we don't have any natural disasters here. The only disaster we have is Peronismo, you know. And that was before Milei got elected. So, you know, so we'll see. But
man-made disasters.
Yeah. That's what he said. We only have man-made disasters. Kind of like California. Well, but they got a lot of natural disasters, too.
They have both.
Yeah. But anyway, I got off on that tangent there. But this Southern Cone area, which, yeah, is kind of a really nice space, especially with a lot of things happening in the world right now.
And I also think they have, so this region is called the Mercosur. It's sort of this like EU light. And I find that very interesting, working with the residencies and the citizenships, because it's sort of like the EU was at a very early point. A lot of this stuff hasn't been integrated, but I think eventually, once they do get around to figuring all of that out, this region, the passports are going to be very powerful. So I think it's a great region to pick up a second passport.
Paraguay, how do you say it?
Paraguay, yeah.
This Uruguay and Paraguay, I mean, it's very difficult for the North Americanos to say, but the Paraguay, it's a pretty easy passport still, or how does that work?
So Paraguay, you're eligible to apply for citizenship after 3 years of residency.
Okay.
The residency is ridiculously easy. It's one of the easier residencies in the world. You don't have to show income or anything. You basically just need a birth certificate and a clean criminal record. So it's something that almost anybody from anywhere can qualify for. They don't require you to spend much time in the country. But then for the citizenship, you can apply after 3 years, and it's relatively easy, but you do have to show that you have substantial ties to the country.
So Paraguay residency, birth certificate, clean criminal record, how many days a year do you need to spend there?
Really, you just need to come down once for 2 days, 1 or 2 days, to get the temporary residency. It'll last you for 2 years. And then you need to come down for another day or two before the temporary residency expires to convert it to permanent. And that's pretty much it.
And that's all you need to qualify for the citizenship. Just do this for 2 years?
Well, if that's all you did, they're not going to grant the citizenship because you're not going to be able to show ties to the country.
Okay.
So we recommend, you know, try to spend some time in the country. But if that's not possible, there are a lot of other things you can do. You can buy property, you can buy land, and land's extremely cheap there. You can buy a tract of land for $5,000 to $15,000.
Wow.
And that goes a long way to showing ties to the country. Things like a driver's license, filing a tax return, even though you're not paying taxes, you're not owing taxes. It's called the showing that the country is the center of your economic life. And there's a tremendous amount of things you can do to prove that, so that in that 3 year period when you apply for citizenship, you don't run into problems.
So you've lived in Latin America now for 16 years or so. How is your Espanol?
It's más o menos. It's, my Spanish is pretty good. Speak it more or less fluently. I understand it perfectly. The problem I have, a number of years ago, I decided I needed to learn Portuguese.
Oh.
And so I sometimes still get confused between the two. I'll throw in Portuguese words when I'm speaking Spanish. And my accent, of course, is not what it should be.
Basically, you'd fit right in Miami.
Basically, yeah.
No, in Miami, it's like the most difficult place to learn because you've got all these collection of people from Latin America. Then you've got Portuguese. You know, got a lot of Brazilians down there. So we literally do have like Spanglish. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
I'll be talking to somebody and they're speaking Spanish, and then they throw English words in there, and they really jumble my brain, and I have hard enough time, you know, understanding. You're probably, you know, a lot more fluent than me for sure. I'm not fluent by any means. But I want to ask you though, speaking of Miami, I noticed you were recently there for like a day or so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw you tweet that Miami is the greatest city in the United States, for somebody who was kind of down on the U.S. for a lot of reasons, maybe. But tell me a little bit of your perception of Miami and also how it relates to Latin America as well.
Well, I would really say that Miami, in a lot of ways, is probably the capital of Latin America. As you mentioned, there's just so much growth, and so much of that growth comes from Latin America. The money, the people, the accents, the language. When I was there, it was funny. I ordered an Uber, and I was in Coral Gables, and she, you know, I have my Uber account has a U.S. phone number. My name's Jeremy in the Uber, and she writes me in Spanish. So it's like that's the default language. Years ago, I actually lived in Miami, and I remember going into a pharmacy when I spoke not a single word of Spanish, and they couldn't help me because the pharmacist and nobody working in the store spoke English. So it's really a different vibe than the rest of the U.S.
Yeah, and you know, I think for Latin Americans, it's a very comfortable city
for sure
because they don't have to know English to get by in Miami. I actually kind of joke. I think I've encountered so many more English-speaking Latin Americans in Latin America than in Miami. Now, you see in the next generation, everybody's fluent, you know, from the immigrant to the next generation. And by the third generation, nobody knows Spanish anymore. It's really, you really see that transformation with a lot of people. But I will say it's becoming a lot more... dominant Latin Americans are in my, it's not just the Cubans, like my dad's from Cuba, but it's just so many different people. We kind of joke, we have the waves of whatever country's having the most trouble at the moment. We get the waves of immigrants from those countries. So we've gotten the Cubans and Nicaraguans for a long time and Haitians and in the last 20 years or so, Venezuelans and Argentinians. We have a lot of Argentinians, Brazilians for many years. And even when things aren't going so bad in those countries, right, people maybe find ways to connect in Miami and build businesses and things like that. So we're kind of seeing that. And I totally agree with you. I think Latin America, I think Miami is the capital of Latin America now. And it's weird to say that because you kind of go, well, is it geographically Latin America? Well, almost, right? Kind of. But I think the big thing is like Latin America doesn't have like its own Washington, D.C., for example, right? Where like there's like a capital where everybody goes and talks to each other. But Miami is that place. People literally go from Latin America to do business with other Latin Americans.
In Miami.
And I don't know what you were there for. Were you there for some
I was actually just – no, I was actually just flying through. I was coming from San Francisco to – and I had a ridiculous layover in Miami. So I just got out of the airport and said, okay, I'm going to go eat some lunch, go to the beach, enjoy the city for the day.
Yeah, and you know, but that's the other aspect of Miami, right? It's a connection point sometimes. Mm-hmm. Panama is too.
Certainly, right? For Latin America. I mean, yeah. If you fly between the U.S. and Latin America, odds are you are going to go through Miami.
Yeah, that's great. We're getting close to wrapping this up, but I wanted to ask you something because earlier in the podcast, and I've seen some of your tweets where you've maybe mentioned that the American dream is over or the American dream isn't what it used to be. You know, I just recently wrote a book. I think I gave you a copy called The American Dream is a Terrible Thing to Waste. My perception is no matter the challenges that we face politically, economically, whether it be disruptive technologies like AI or just what the internet has done in general to so many businesses, you know, exporting of jobs overseas, you know, there's a lot of things that have been very disruptive to the traditional American dream. But I kind of feel like if you can build an entrepreneur mindset and really bring along the traits, really have the traits of what it means to be an entrepreneur, whether you actually ever go out and start a business yourself. You know, if you have the trait of being a problem solver like you are, and you can apply that to whatever life you're doing, I think you can find your way and live the American dream. I also would say that I don't think, in my view, that the American dream has to be limited to the borders of the United States of America. And, you know, on one of my previous podcasts, we had a mutual friend of ours, James Nuveen, who also lives in Medellin, Colombia. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because proposed the topic to him, you know, living the American dream, not in the United States, though, but he was born in the United States. It felt like he had a lot of opportunities because of being born and raised there and having connections, having education there, all these sorts of things. And then saying, hey, but I'm a sovereign individual and I'm going to go live wherever the heck I feel like living for the time being anyway. And you know the old, I guess the phrase that's going around now: Granada in dólares and gastar in pesos, right? that's the real dream, right? To make the money in dollars and spend it in pesos. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so all of that that I just threw at you there with the American dream. What do you have to say about the American dream?
Well, I think the traditional American dream, it's not possible for the majority of people anymore in the same way that it once was. So I think the idea, at least the way it was always explained to me, the American dream is anybody can come to this country, work hard, purchase a house. You know, back then when everybody was talking about the American dream, the idea was really, you know, you get married, you have a good enough job, even if you're not particularly educated, that you're able to support a family. Mm-hmm. The wife is able to stay home and raise the kids. And I think that's really a luxury that doesn't exist in too many places in the world, and certainly not in the U.S. at this point, because of the cost. It's just become unaffordable for too many people. And I do sort of like the idea that the American dream maybe isn't limited to just America. Well, actually, we are in America. America's the continent. And I think for a lot of people, especially the younger people I work with, that's what they find. It's you know, they are able at a young age to come to Latin America, ideally making income in dollars or in euros, and then spending the money in pesos. They're able to save money. They're able to pay a lot less tax. And over time, they can buy a house, they can get married, and they can raise a family in a more traditional way that, one, may not even be possible in places like the U.S. or Europe, but two, from a cultural standpoint, I think that's almost frowned upon in a lot of ways these days. And you come down to Latin America, those traditional values are still very much alive. And so people find they can come down here and live a much more traditional life.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me, if you look at, you know, the past few hundred years and the American experience in terms of what we think of as the United States of America, the American experience has been one of constant mobility. We literally had pilgrims get on a boat because they were frustrated. They couldn't practice, you know, the religion they wanted to, so they literally got on the Mayflower, right? They came over. We had other people come over just for economic reasons, maybe, right? Hey, I want to start afresh. Maybe they were just adventurous explorers, right? Whatever they were. But they came, and then you had the constant westward expansion of the United States, right? All the way to California, mm-hmm. and beyond, and to Alaska and everything. Maybe that adventure, the American adventure, is now going south, right? It's in Mexico. Mexico's doing much better. A lot of great opportunities there.
For sure.
Colombia, you mentioned Panama. I've been in Guatemala. I've seen a lot of great opportunities there. We're here in Argentina. You know, we'll see what Malay does with this place. But obviously, there's a lot of hot spots, a lot of trouble areas in Latin America. But I think it's probably better than it's ever been. And I think the other aspect of kind of just adding to what you said is, I think for young people today, I think you're totally right. I mean, when you look at the facts and you look at the numbers and you look at a lot of people's individual experiences, the cost of living is so much higher in the United States now. You know, salaries have gone up and things like that. But if you actually look at housing costs compared to income, the cost, the percentage is so much higher than it was before. And you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, people have more space in some of these homes now, and but the, you know, cost is always economically, it's always supply and demand, right? So we aren't building, especially in the cities that people want to live in, fast enough to meet demand. Other places are falling apart. Maybe manufacturing has gone away at other places, things like this. But I do think, you know, maybe people could expand their mind a little bit and say, hey, you know what? I don't have to be limited to these countries' borders anymore, especially the way the economy, you know, allows me to work. The technology allows me to work from wherever I am and travel as fast as I can, you know, to get from one place to another. So maybe the American dream is something broader than just the physical boundaries of the United States of America. And in some ways, you're a testament to that because you've been doing this for 16 years, and you seem to be very happy in a lot of these places in Latin America. I do have to say that you go back, do you have family in the U.S., and do they think you're crazy? What's going on with that?
I do. I go back a lot. My parents are older, and I try to go back 3-4 times a year, which, especially from Argentina,
yeah,
they're in the Bay Area still, so it's even more difficult. It's a 9-hour flight to Florida, and then it's another 5-6 hours.
See, I think that's where a place like Colombia, Guatemala, Mexico have advantages, is just the proximity. I could be in Colombia or Guatemala faster from Florida than I can be to visit my brother in Colorado.
I love Argentina, but I always say, for me, the biggest negative is just the proximity. I mean, we're at the end of the earth here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's far to the United States. It's far to Europe. It's just far from everywhere. So,
yeah. So, look, it has its advantages, like you said, but it's also, every place has something you got to look at. It's, it's the length of time it takes to get there. But it's doable, right? It's not
exactly.
Like we're not, you know, Christopher Columbus took a lot longer to get across the ocean than
the planes. The planes are great for the most part. So,
yeah. Well, Jerz, this has been a really fantastic conversation with you. And I'm going to just pivot this by saying we're going to kind of continue a different element of this kind of conversation with his girlfriend in the next episode. So be sure to stay tuned, subscribe, like this, so that you can do that as well and hear from Gabby, so that we'll hear a little bit more from her as well. But I just want to give you the last word. Any final comments you want to say?
Well, it's great to do this. And anybody listening, I definitely encourage you to expand your mind and look at the possibilities that exist in the world outside of wherever you grew up or wherever you live. And it's a big world out there. So take advantage of it.
And the best way they can reach you?
So I'm on Twitter, The Jerz Way. My website is thejerzway.com. And all my contact information is there.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes. Well, Jerz, thanks so much for being an agent of innovation. And thanks for being on the Agents of Innovation podcast.
Thanks for having me.